Good morning, everyone out there in 88.5 KRFY land, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. It is Tuesday, February 23rd, coming down to the end of February already, and this is the year that has 29 days in February.
Woohoo!
Leap. Says right there on the calendar. And we have a special edition of The Morning Show this week. This is Garden Talk. We're back, girls.
Yay!
Yay!
And that means that we're hopeful that I've heard that there's robins out and probably finding little worms in the ground. It's an early spring. We could say it's a short winter, another way of saying it. And this day we have Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Produce. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Pat Wentworth from the Community Garden.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to have you. And a special co-host this morning, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Susie.
It's so nice to have everyone here, and we're going to talk about gardening. And I wanted to sort of, well, first let's hear about the weather. I think if you all went out to your cars, you noticed, first of all, there was a lot of ice on the cars. It was very cold last night. It's currently, believe it or not, 23 degrees out.
Wow, really?
I know. That's what the National Weather Service is saying. And today we can expect patchy fog in the morning and then sunny, high of 43. Low tonight, again, pretty cold, 27. And on Wednesday, the high is 45, partly sunny and mostly sunny on Thursday, high of 47. With lows between 29 and 31 on both Wednesday and Thursday night. I think towards the end of the week or maybe the beginning of next week, we will have some rain again. But it's kind of nice to have a break right now. What else can we say? That's about it. I'm used to having Chris across from me, Chris Bessler. He's in another part of the world right now. So he can't tell us how many extra days, hours of or minutes of daylight that we are having right now. But I'm sure that it's more than it was last week.
Mm-hmm. It's around 4 minutes, Susie, that I do
per
know.
Day.
Yeah.
So in a week, that's about 28.
Another half hour.
We'll take
wonderful.
That anytime.
Yeah.
And again, our guests are Emily Levine and Pat Wentworth, and we're here to talk about gardening. And I thought we'd start out with a little quote, a little saying. I guess it's a quote by Michael Pollan. He wrote a book called Second Nature, A Gardener's Education. And this is what he has to say. A garden should make you feel you've entered privileged space, a place not just set apart, but reverberant. And it seems to me that to achieve this, the gardener must put some kind of a twist on the existing landscape, turn its prose into something near poetry. Mm. Michael Pollan.
Very nice.
Wow.
A good thought as we...
That's a tall order.
I know. Yes. Not just rose, but poetry. And one of the things that we're here today to do is, all through January, didn't you find that your mind sort of started turning directly towards gardening?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just happened.
Absolutely.
And now we can talk about all those thoughts and dreams we've had in the last through January and February. So what is coming up? And what have we been doing to get ready?
Well, I've been taking applications for the community garden. We're 65% full at this point, and I know of several more applications coming in. So anybody wanting to rent a plot needs to get their applications in. You just go to the Sandpoint Community Garden website. Just Google it and go to the website, download the forms, and get them off to the, with a check to Parks and Rec, and you'll have a plot. Because people just wait too long, and then they're sad because they can't get one.
Well, because there's probably new listeners, as we know, people tune in when they tune in. What is the Sandpoint Community Garden, and how does it work?
I have no idea. That's a tough question. You've stumped me.
You do too stumped know me.
Well, we're in our eighth season, so it pretty much works on its own. We have people that tend to the garden that are there like almost every day that take care of the food bank plots and for other food organizations in the town. We have 6 plots specifically for giving food to the different organizations in town. And we have volunteers that take care of that. It started you know, as I said, this is our eighth season, and it's really, it's just a community. It's grown into where the plotters get to know other people in the community that they never knew before. I certainly made friends from the garden, people I've never known, and through STI, which Emily knows of, and all of that, I've met a lot of wonderful people. And the garden is just, it's kind of an iconic thing now. We've gotten more compliments from the people that come in from, for the summer. They come over and they walk through the garden and they, you know, they just really enjoy it between the flowers and the berries and the vegetables. And the plotters are quite proud of all the food they've been growing. I mean, they're really, really proud. And they look at others, how'd you get that cabbage so big and all that
stuff.
So
you can learn from each other.
Absolutely.
But this community garden, you purchase a plot. There's mm-hmm. two different sizes, I think.
Yep.
Or you can purchase two.
Yep.
And then that is your plot, but you are part of a group of people that have done this. And I even know someone who has a garden at home out in the country mm-hmm. is choosing to have a plot here in town just for the community's sake.
Yeah, that's we've got a few of those people that just come in because it is a community.
And Pat, for those of us who are really new to the area, where is it? Where is it located?
I can't tell you.
Oh, it's a secret.
It is. It's on Pine and Highway 2, the corner of Pine and Highway 2.
All right.
Dubs Field.
Okay. That's great.
Yep, and it's pretty. You can see there's a sign up, and it's obviously from Highway. It's obvious from Highway 2, so it's pretty obvious.
And every year, do you fill up? Is it pretty much used?
Yes. By May, and I would caution to say because we're having a short winter, I would say that to get your reservations in as soon as possible, because there are people that just waited too long and they just want to get in and there's nothing available. So it's just be an early bird rather than thinking May is okay.
So now is the time.
Now is the time. Absolutely. It's the time. I mean, people can go in and actually plant now. I'm going to be planting peas in my own garden this week. So, you know, people that have plots can go in and plant peas if they so choose.
And Pat, this is Julie. Would you think that would be a good way to go for a beginning gardener? Is that a great place to talk with other gardeners and really learn your way around the garden?
Yeah, we have a lot of seasoned gardeners now, mm-hmm. and even the new ones. I mean, you know, I learned gardening in several different ways. And before, you know, I started gardening before the internet. Emily, hang on. There mm-hmm. was gardening before the internet. But the information you had to go to the library and all of that to get. So, now the internet is, I use the internet all the time when I've got troublesome, you know, like mites or something on my plants, or if there's a problem with a yellowing and all of that, I go to the internet and they show pictures. I mean, it's right there in front of you. But people are really happy to share their successes.
I would think that that the community garden would be a great place because there's nothing to replace like seeing how close somebody else's plants are, or, oh, why, I thought my plants looked great, but yours look 10 times better. How did you do that?
Right.
Or whatever, like just that comparison and how different everybody gardens so differently, and you can learn so much from looking at different people's plots. So I would imagine that would be a wonderful learning place.
Yeah, kind of a beginner's garden, first garden would be mm-hmm. wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to get to, unless you had a question specifically for the community garden, back to the thought of January and what we were doing. You know, there's the cliche that in January all the seed catalogs show up. Do you still get seed catalogs, gals, and start planning and purchasing and ordering or do you mm-hmm. just use the internet pretty much?
And if so, who do you like? I'm wanting mm-hmm. to hear who I should be ordering from, whose catalogs I should be looking at.
Yeah, I have a stack of seed catalogs that is literally like 18 inches tall because I have a commercial farm and they probably sell my name to each other. And so they find me. I was gone this winter and I was traveling. And so I kind of missed that stage. I did take a couple of catalogs with me, and I have kind of this year narrowed down my seed order to just a couple of companies because it was easier that way from a distance. But I do still, I actually use seed catalogs as a reference in the garden all the time. I stash seed catalogs in my garden, in my greenhouse, because there's growing information there that can be really helpful at you know, planting times, planting spacing, possible pests, disease resistances, days to maturity. All of those things are like really helpful information. So I use them all through the season. There's also, so I order through some companies that are sort of geared toward market growers. High Mowing is a 100% organic seed company. High Mowing Organic Seeds is what they're called. They're out of Vermont. Johnny's Selected Seeds does a lot of really great innovation. They are breeding some, you know, new, really productive, really flavorful varieties, and they have a lot of tools also in their catalog for organic growers, as well as they have conventional seed. And then there's some really great smaller catalogs. Fedco out of Maine is a old school, really great. Like, their catalog is like a book, and every single variety has a story behind it. You know, it's, you look up a variety and it's just got this quote from like Mary Smith says that this pea, you know, was the best pea for whatever, you know, and every single variety has a story behind it. And that's a really fun catalog. And you can get smaller packets from them for like 90 cents. You know, like it's maybe more fun for home gardeners because you can try lots of different things instead of paying $3 for a packet or whatever. You can get really small quantities from Fedco.
I will look them up because that sounds like a fun one to start off.
They're really fun. They're a little bit less internet fancy. There's no fancy photos. There's no photos at all in their catalog. It's all on newsprint, and there's drawings, like old drawings. It's a really fun catalog.
And what about you, Pat? Do you have any favorites?
I have two that I use most every year. Most, I don't have to order every year because I order seeds ahead. But Annie's Heirloom is one.
Oh,
I
don't
know where they're located, but they're a great outfit. They ship on time. They have a fantastic variety, both organic and non-organic seeds. And then Heirloom Seeds is another one. And they're a small outfit, family-owned. And so they're also a good one. I use their seeds pretty much exclusively, both of those vendors. That's what I use.
I want to say, too, there's a couple of... I had the opportunity to go to a Organic Seed Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization, conference this winter, and got to kind of get my fingers into the world of seed breeders, organic seed breeders and growers. And it's a really amazing community. And there's a lot of smaller seed companies these days popping up and a lot of people growing seed, breeding varieties adapted for specific climates. There's a Pacific Northwest seed catalog called Adaptive Seeds, and I know many of the people who grow seed for them. And there's Turtle Tree. So it's fun to look into some of the more local, specifically adapted companies also. And it's, you know, they're small businesses, family owned and operated, and it's a really cool thing.
Back to the thought of buying locally in that respect. And also, those seeds often are grown in our own climate, so they're adapted to our elevation and our zone that we're in, and so they have more viability.
Yeah.
At least in essence, they should.
It's a little bit challenging because our region is so ecologically diverse. So like I went to a seed swap there. This was in Corvallis, which is not very far away, but it's a completely different climate, really. It's relatively local, but our growing seasons, just because it grows well in Corvallis doesn't mean it's going to grow well
but
here.
Then you just travel 50 miles east and you get up into the Cascades and you have a whole different zone, they call it, or climate. And what zone are we here in Bonner County? I mean, even though I know you can grow peaches in Hope and can hardly grow tomatoes in other areas, it really depends, the diverse climate.
They rezoned a couple of years ago, maybe because of climate change or whatever, but I call it 6A now. There's A and B. Yeah. I used to call Zone 5, but it looks like to me now we're Zone 6. But, you know, town versus the Sally Valley versus Sagal is all so different. So. Yeah.
And I find that really amazing. Again, coming from Minnesota about a year ago, we could be zone 3 or 4. And I think that a zone 6A is similar to areas far south, isn't it?
It
Georgia might even have some.
They would be more. But, it's Minnesota. It's a much longer season than Minnesota.
Yes, but just so having come there, Pacific Northwest can have such wonderfully warm.
And the thing about zones is that it's based on low temperatures. And the thing about Sandpoint that is important to know is that our latitude is really high. I used to there's an organic gardener in Maine, Elliot Coleman, who has written many books and has an amazing wealth of knowledge, and I used to look at his books. I always sort of thought, like, Maine, Idaho, like, we're probably pretty much on the same latitude. And so I used to look at his planting dates and kind of use them. And recently I actually looked at the latitude, and we are a couple degrees latitude higher than him in Maine. And so I thought, daylight is huge. So that's an important distinction. Like, the zones don't take daylight into account. And in the early spring and the fall, you know, on the edges of the equinox is when that really makes a difference. So,
Emily, I have a question. When you were at the Organic Seed Alliance, did they talk a lot about or teach you about seed saving? Because it's a whole science. It's not that you just take the seed from it. It really, there's variations depending on which vegetable you're using.
Yeah, so this conference was for established seed growers and seed breeders, so it was kind of like that was like implied knowledge there on some level. They kind of like assumed that you know the basics of seed saving, which are really complicated. There are certain vegetables and flowers that are really quite simple to save seed from, and there's some really great places to start, like with tomatoes and peppers.
Squash.
Lettuce. No, squash is not easy.
Really?
No.
They cross is what I think I've heard. Huh. So you have to just grow one variety.
Well, no, you can't even do that, because if your neighbor grows another variety, the squash have male and female flowers.
That's right.
And so a female flower has a fruit, which is going to have seeds. And so the bees come and they grab pollen from, you know, they're just like in there gathering pollen.
So they're easily cross-pollinated.
Yes.
And then you get those strange varieties that you're not sure exactly what they are. They sometimes are good to eat.
So the seeds that develop inside of fruit are a cross between the pollen from the male flower that got into the female flower and pollinated it. So if a bee went in and whatever, got a butternut squash, then it gets more complicated, because there's different families of of squash. So squash is actually one of the most complicated seeds to save.
Emily
can plant a random squash seed, but it's not going to be true to its
original
type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for more beginning gardeners, like as I might consider myself, could I ask you both to name a few of the rather easy plants for seed saving, and then some of the tougher ones? Just each give us a few of your favorites that are easy to work with, and then some that we might want to stay
away
from.
For sure.
Okay.
The tomatoes are very easy.
Yeah.
And I save, shouldn't I get some? I save the seeds from the varieties I end up really liking. So
Great. Yeah.
Tomatoes are great. Peppers. peas and beans are great.
Yep.
Because you just you can flag off a little plant or a section, and you just let those plants mature past, you know, the green eating stage, and they dry out, and the actual peas that are in the pod, that's your seed.
That sounds easy.
Yeah, it is easy. But it's really helpful to know that you're going to do it. Saving seed, depending on the type of gardener you are and the type of garden that you have, it can take some planning because it takes a while for the pea seed to mature. And so if you can't just like be picking peas and then one day decide like, oh, I'll save seed, you might not have left enough time for them to mature. So you flag it off and you don't ever pick from that plant. So plus then the earliest peas that come on are going to be the ones that you save seed from. So you also want to be selective because you are in essence breeding. So it would be wise to save seeds from the tomatoes that ripened first, because then you may get an earlier, slightly, and if you do that every year, you might get a slightly earlier and earlier crop every year.
There's a lot to be said about seed saving, and that's what we did last fall. And now we're looking at our seed catalogs, ordering for the spring. I would just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show with Susie and Julie, and our guests are Emily Levine and Pat Wentworth. And we are talking, this is Garden Talk. We're back, and we're talking about what we can do in January and February. We have an early spring coming, and let's talk a little bit about seed varieties. Or varieties of different vegetables that every year, do you have your favorites that you plant and then you try some new ones? Because there are new ones every year. And how do new seeds come about or new varieties come about? Because it just seems like we're getting newer and, you know, different varieties of tomatoes. It just never stops. So how does that happen and how are we getting these new varieties?
Well, you went to the breeding, the seed breeding place. You have a lot more information than I do on that one.
Well, yeah, there are people out there working really hard to breed, you know, in the traditional methods of breeding, varieties that are more vigorous, that are more disease resistant, that are more beautiful, that are more delicious, that just fill niches that we haven't had yet, or they're just working on building up a seed stock of varieties that already do exist, and they're just trying to grow them out and get enough out there in the world so that they can be shared among different gardeners. I find new variety. I mean, there's so many varieties. I find that the best way to find a new variety for yourself is to talk to other gardeners who grow in your area. Certain varieties do well in certain places. And so when I go to seed or farm conferences, like I went to a conference that was not about seeds, talked to farmers, and we had a whole session where we just threw out different crops and said, like, this variety has done really well for me. So that's how I learn about new varieties. It's just from talking to people. And then when you, I highly recommend buying, if you're going to purchase plant starts, purchasing them from the farmer's market or from a local grower, because the varieties that they sell at Home Depot or the grocery store are just, they're grown in
California or Florida or wherever.
And they're not designed for this region. And you can't ask anybody about the qualities of the fruit. And so buying from a local farmer or local nursery can ensure that you're growing a variety that has been proven to do well here. You know, we sell tomato plants, and we sell the varieties that we grow because we know we'll get fruit.
And Pat, have you, it's kind of like being a little kid in a candy store, probably at this point in time when you start looking through those seed catalogs, have you found some new interesting varieties you're going to try this year? And do you want to share any of those?
Well, I'm going to grow the tomatoes that I grew last year, because it was the Italian
heirloom. You told me about that.
I'll give you the seeds.
Oh, good.
They were just phenomenal. So I'm growing those again, and there's another I did the German pinks, and those are so, they get so big. They're not quite as meaty as a normal, like a beefsteak or something, but they were really fun because they got huge. I mean, I had a 2-pound tomato. I mean, you know, it was just huge. So,
yeah, and pink.
Yeah,
fun.
And pink. Yeah. I mean, they were tasty, but not quite as meaty as the others. So, yeah, what happens with me is it's not so much the variety as it is the another type of vegetable that I'll grow that I'm not going to grow peppers this year or something. I'm going to replace that with something else, saying I'm going to try this and see if I use more of that, because I start switching out things in my garden and saying, well, this didn't work. I don't grow celery. You know, it's just because I don't use enough of it. It's just as cheap to buy it at the farmer's market. And it's the same with cauliflower. I'm not growing cauliflower anymore because, you know, I eat it, but I don't, you know, I can freeze it, and it takes up a lot of space. So it's just as easy to buy cabbage and cauliflower and, you know, that type of thing, and use the gardens for like storage vegetables, carrots and stuff.
So you really start dreaming in January, and you learned from last year what worked,
sure,
what didn't, what you really used. I just want to flip back to last fall. The cauliflower coming out of Red Wheelbarrow Produce was phenomenal.
Thank
what
you.
Happened? How did you get such an amazing fall crop of broccoli and cauliflower?
I don't know.
It really stood out.
Yeah, it really is.
It was a really long fall, and it was, yeah, I don't know. They just came on really well.
Mm-hmm.
I just... did my, might be a good segue. I just did my crop plan for the year, and there's a fall crop of cauliflower and broccoli.
So you planted that late in the season.
So
later.
So I happened to have refreshed my memory yesterday, and I planted that fall cauliflower. It's not that late. It's because it takes a very long time. I seeded it in the greenhouse June 1st and planted it out July 1st.
Wow.
And that was ready in October. So it is a long crop. It does take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of worth it.
Oh, it was beautiful. We went to sleep for the winter thinking about that.
Awesome.
Fall crop you had at the market. So I thought we could take a little musical break. What do you think?
Yeah.
And sure, because winter has come and gone, this is 88.5 KRFY, by the way, and this is the morning show. And we're having garden talk this day. Here's a song by Gillian Welch, Winter's Come and Gone. You ready?
We can only hope.
Yeah, we'll be right back. Stay with us. More garden talk
and
coming
we'll
up.
Come. And we'll go.
And that was Gillian Welch, Winter's Come and Gone. And you're listening to 88.5 KRFY. And this is the morning show on Tuesday, February 23rd, and this is Garden Talk with Susie and Julie as hosts. Here's a little quote to get us back into more discussions about our early garden thoughts. The care of the earth is our most ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only hope. And that was Wendell Berry. So with that...
Very nice. Yes, yeah, so with Pat and Emily, we've already talked a little bit about what you like to plant, things that are easy for saving seeds, things that are a little tougher. And I'm interested in knowing what vegetables can we be starting indoors, maybe in our hothouses, our greenhouses? What things can we sow directly into the ground? Maybe a little too early for that, but Pat, for a gardener who's getting going, are some ideas?
Some to start, because that's what I'm going to do some planting, is our peas. I mean, peas you can plant, you know, it's pretty much you can plant them. They're not going to get killed with the weather that we're having now anyway. But, and they, you know, they may come up a little later, and everything catches up eventually,
sure,
anyway. But peas
are so tasty, too.
Yeah, and I planted those last year in March, and I'm going to plant them this year because we're just so warm now. And couple other things I planted in March. I planted arugula in a cold frame, so it heats up, and that's okay.
Yes.
Things inside, though, you can start. I don't plant celery because I don't use it that much. But celery takes like 8 to 10 weeks start, and then you transplant it. So you've got 2 to 2.5 months to start it inside and then put it outside. and and other long the long hauls as far as starting for seeds are peppers and eggplant. Those are 8 to 10 weeks.
Okay.
You know, you start them from seed inside, you know, your grow lights, and you're leaving your grow lights on for like 15 hours. So, but then you transplant them after 8 to 10 weeks. So if you figure this is March, basically, you got April, May, so they're going in May, which you know, that's depending on May. Peppers and eggplant are kind of tender. So you got to watch out for that. But those are some of the things you can start right now. Tomatoes are, 6 to 8 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
So those are, it's a little early to start tomatoes, I would think, because otherwise they'll get leggy and you're going to lose them. I lost one. I just got, you know, I got tomato fever in a couple years ago. And I mean, they were like this, 3 feet tall inside. And it was just like, well, they're done. I couldn't do them.
Sure.
So it's that kind of thing. Squash later on. That needs more.
So we're a little early for some of the
most of it.
Yeah,
greenhouse
It feels like spring, but it's still pretty early.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
There are. I mean, some of the colder, hardier crops, like in the brassica family, kale and broccoli and cauliflower and things, Asian greens and things like that. I think at this point right now, if you're in a really warm spot, you might start some stuff inside to be transplanting out at the end of March, early April. But who knows what our year is going to be like.
Right.
And really waiting till, you know, mid-April to plant outside is probably going to be your best bet. So and those things only take 4 weeks or so to grow inside as transplants. Starting, but, you know, maybe before we meet again, starting in the first couple weeks of March or mid-March or the last week of March is March is a really good time to be starting seeds. That's when my greenhouse really starts to fill up.
I'll put that on my calendar.
And what are some of the first things, Emily, that you're going to start?
Well, I have started my greenhouse onions, if you're going to start them from seed, which is, you know, really only economical if you're growing a lot of them. A lot of people either buy starts or sets. And so those I've started. I started some herbs, some parsley, and some thyme and stuff. I'm doing a heated greenhouse crop of tomatoes this year, so I did start my tomatoes. But I didn't start any tomatoes for anyone else yet because, you know, so I'll start my tomatoes for, like, outdoor planting or even an unheated greenhouse in mid-March.
Okay.
And I'll start my peppers and eggplant on March 1st also.
So if we're just dying to get outside and do a little something outside, I guess it's more the season still for pruning, maybe pruning back our perennials.
Yeah, cleaning up. Yeah, your fruit, your berries, pruning them. If you didn't do that in the fall, it's a great time. Fruit trees can, I think, start to get pruned. You know, now's a great time. Cleaning up, you can start putting compost down and things like that.
And what about soil prep and putting new things down to enhance the augmenting the soil with preparations? What are you both doing with that?
Well, the first thing is to do a soil test if you can. Testing your soil is a really helpful way to really know what you need. And spring is a good time to do that. There's a lot of different ways that you can test your soil. There's some different companies online that you can get it tested through. You can also go through the University of Idaho Extension. If you go out there to the Extension office on Boyer, they have bags that you can gather your soil in, and they have instructions on how to do it. And then you just bring it back to them, and they send it in, and they'll do, you know, the major stuff that you want to know about for your soil, and then you can figure out how you want to handle your soil for the year.
Do they give instructions on how to change that so it comes back very acidic, low in NP or K,
right?
Nitrogen, potassium, or
soil tests can be really variable on how they report them. They're actually quite cryptic for the most part. You can order. Sometimes they charge extra for recommendations, and then often those recommendations come in the form of, like, conventional fertilizer, like add 5 pounds of you know, nitrogen fertilizer, where, you know, in an organic gardening situation, You know, you might be adding alfalfa meal or, you know, something or compost. And it's actually quite challenging to get recommendations that make sense to an organic situation. I know that Peaceful Valley, Peaceful Valley, groworganic.com is their website. They offer a soil test that I think is really popular with home gardeners. And I have never gotten it through them, but I would suspect that their recommendations might be a little bit more translatable for organic growing and for gardeners.
I know that every year I kind of whine that my garden isn't producing the way I imagined it would or could or should. And I think both of you have said, test the soil. Everybody I talk to, everyone I talk to says, test the soil. So guess what? I'm doing it this year.
Yeah.
So even if you use the one at the Extension Idaho, University of Idaho right. Extension Service, you can still translate that into an organic thought process.
You can. I think it's $30.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's worth it at this point.
Yeah, it's very worth it. I mean, it could be something so simple as if your pH is off, then you might have all of the other nutrients in your soil that you need, but your plants can't access it because, you know, there's so it's a living system, and it's a really complicated living system, and so it's important to understand what's going on.
Where do you take your soil from? I have 22 beds, and the soil didn't come from the same place every year.
Yeah,
and you know, so
they'll tell you, the University of Idaho recommends that you take samples from different places and then mix them together.
Ah, okay.
And then you'll have an average. Or if you are really, really, if you have a bigger garden and you're really wanting to know, you know, about a certain plot, then you can order multiple soil tests so that you can find out, like, if you have a greenhouse and you want to know what's going on in there. So there's instructions and with any soil test, because there is actually a really specific way to do it to get good results. And spring is a really good time to test.
Yeah.
So and a good thing to do is if you do this annually or semi-annually, to do it the same time of year. If you got a soil test in the fall, you know, maybe wait till fall to get another one, because the soil is constantly changing. So it's a good time to get into the habit of doing a soil test in the spring, or you could do it this spring or and every other spring or whatever.
Sounds like good instructions. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we do at Garden Talk is we talk a little bit. We share some recipe from our recent cooking adventures. Would anyone like to share a recipe, be it food from your root cellar that you're using up before spring happens, or raise your hand and call on you? Julie has a recipe.
Well, I do have one, and this is a simple one, and many of you have probably eaten this one before, but I am a big fan this time of the year of oven roasted asparagus with mushrooms. And it's so simple. You just preheat your oven to 4 1/4, trim your asparagus, slice your, we'll use 1 pound of asparagus, trim that, 8 ounces of mushroom of your choice, slice that. Coat all in olive oil or oil of your choice. I like to crush 1 clove of garlic, salt and pepper, toss that all together, throw it on a baking sheet, and then I'll roast that for about 20 minutes. And I always try and stir at 10 minutes. And it comes out crispy and brown, and with so much of that asparagus mushroom flavor, you'll love it. If you haven't done it.
Parmesan cheese on top of that is really good.
Okay.
There you go, Pat.
Sounds good.
I'll add that next time.
But did you have anything, Emily? I know last year, not this last winter, but the winter before, you went to culinary school in Vancouver.
I did. Ooh,
and learned some great culinary techniques.
I did, yeah. That's been really fun. You know, I'm always just eating what's there, so I have a lot of kale right now. I always leave, this year I left 4 beds of kale in my garden because it just winters over so well. So it's just actually I have 5 beds because there's one in my greenhouse also. Mm-hmm. So I have this abundance of kale. So I'm eating raw. I mean, and then in the spring, for me, I have this really strong desire to eat more lightly and sort of like cleanse my body out a little bit from heavy eating of winter. So I'm eating a lot of raw kale salad right now, massaging kale. That's what I had for breakfast, was raw kale with a poached egg. And then, but then still having some hearty foods. I'm going to have a short rib chili with kombucha squash that I haven't had yet, but I am making today. So kind of combining those two, like warming, hearty, you know, it's cold at night right now. And so making some of those comfort foods while we still have all day to braise a stew. And also eating a lot of roasted garlic, because I have a lot of garlic stored. And I always my eyes are bigger than my stomach when it comes to keeping my garlic. So I look at it and I think, I'll definitely go through all this. And it's just starting to sprout a little bit in my storage. So I throw heads of garlic into my wood stove.
So lots of different ways to use up stuff from the winter.
Yeah.
From the root cellar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in the fall, when you put this food away, it's your extra food. It's the food that you didn't sell, you didn't give away. And now you're finishing it up.
Chowing down.
Mm-hmm. I know that I just got a whole bunch of beets from a farmer up north. 20 pounds of beets, and I'm making beet kvass.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that is a tonic that stands out, and I'm just, my whole body's just craving it right
now.
That's
awesome.
And I just keep making it. So,
explain what that is.
Okay, beet kvass to me is like a tonic. It's an ancient way, not ancient, but it comes from Europe. Mm-hmm. And you just chop up beets, you peel them, chop them up, put them in a half gallon glass container, about 2 cups worth. You don't, not real fine, because you don't want too much to come out into the liquid. A tablespoon and a half of good sea salt. Fill it up with water. Put a top on it. 2 days, it's done. You pour off the liquid, and that first liquid is your first pouring, I guess you'd say. Fill it back up. You get a second one. I actually like the second one better. It wasn't quite as salty and intense, but it still had the kvass. Has a little bit of a zing to it. And the probiotics. Oh, the other thing you put in there is about 1/4 cup of whey. Mm-hmm. I just strained off some organic Greek whole yogurt, mm-hmm. and put about 1/4 cup of whey. It's amazing.
Sounds lovely. So it's a fermented, lacto-fermented. Yeah.
It's the first thing I have. I put a little bit of lemon in it and put a little water with it. It's the first thing I drink every morning.
Lovely. Right. That sounds like a wonderful spring tonic.
Yep.
And I will just comment on both ideas. Susie, for the kvass, that's an easy tonic to make, and it isn't filling your home with odor, which is a nice thing. And then, Emily, I'll say the same thing about your kale idea of eating raw kale now and massaging it. You get the sweetness, but you're not filling your house with that odor of cooked brassica.
Sure.
Good ideas.
I think we should take a little musical break. This is a quick one. This is Woody Guthrie, "This Land Is Your Land." And on this day in 1940, he wrote this song.
Oh, wow.
In New York City, in a little apartment in Brooklyn somewhere. But this is Woody Guthrie, "This Land Is Your Land." And we'll be back with more Garden Talk and a few other things on the morning show. So stay with us. And that was Woody Guthrie, "This Land Is Your Land," which was written on this day in 1940 in New York City by Woody Guthrie. And we're back in the studio. This is 88.5 KRFY, and you're listening to The Morning Show, the Garden Talk edition. Another little quote to start off the next few minutes of our ending of our show. Why try to explain miracles to children when you can just have them plant a garden? Yes, I like that.
That's great.
By Robert Brault. It's so true. And with that in mind, we'll probably have a Garden Talk show coming up once a month now that we're in it again. And one of the times we'll have someone from the gardens at the schools, the school garden project, have them come in and tell us what their plans are for the year. You know, we've been talking about the beginning. This is the beginning of the new gardening season. We've been looking at seed catalogs. And I just think that seed catalogs, to me, are just so exciting. It doesn't even matter if they're naturally organic or heirloom, because they all have so much information. And it can really inspire us and jumpstart us into our gardening endeavor for the year. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely. It's just, it's pleasant, you know, just going through them during the winter. I mean, it's kind of geeky if you go through them, like, no offense, Emily, but if you bring them on a trip.
Obsessively.
It's guilty as charged. Yeah.
Did you pick up a bunch of those seed catalogs at that convention you went to in that garden? You went to several things.
Yeah, I did. I got some more catalogs there. I also, they had a beautiful seed swap there where it was like probably one of the bigger seed swaps in the country. And it was really a beautiful thing. People, you know, these are the people who have put, I mean, it takes years to breed a variety, years and years. And so these are people who are breeding their own varieties, growing them out for seed and then giving them away. And it's like, wow, that was probably my inspiring seed catalog moment of the year for sure.
Do you know, Emily, do we have any seed swap groups in this area?
There's a seed library that's based out of the Bonner County Library, and I have not participated. I do not know very much about it, but I know that it exists.
Maybe the next show we'll have someone on from the seed library also.
Yeah, that'd be good timing.
Yep.
And just last question that I have for the gals would be, to talk a little bit more about what we need to look for as we're cleaning up our gardens in terms of any pests that we might need to watch out for. I've noticed some little vole tracks in my lawn. I've noticed holes and things here and there. What do you all look out for that you can work on now?
Well, all I've done, I mean, I have to because we are like inundated with gophers and voles at where I live. And I have to put hardware cloth beneath all of my beds.
Okay.
So that nothing can get through. Although some can get down and burrow through. I don't have that issue. But coming from below, it's a real big problem in my area.
Okay.
So we have three cats, which helps a lot. Takes care of some of that. And a dog that just loves to dig for gophers. So other than that, that's, you know, what I look
for. Dogs and cats.
Yeah.
Good.
I also have cats for my rodent problems, which... They have, they have taken care of. I just checked out my garlic, which is coming up, and it's all there. So I guess the cats did their job again. There are, you know, it was such a mild winter. The kale that I have in my garden, it does have like live aphids on it a little bit.
Wow.
That overwintered. So I think as, you know, our winters seem to be getting a little more mild every year, at least the last couple of years. I think as that happens, it's good to keep an eye on things in the early spring and nip things in the bud. Just you know, you get, if you have an organic garden, you kind of get accustomed to just crushing bugs between your fingers. Mm. That's always a good choice. Make sure you know what it is. Identifying bugs is important because it could be something beneficial. Mm-hmm. But pretty much any caterpillar is going to be a very hungry caterpillar, and they're probably going to eat your vegetables. So also there can be caterpillars this time of year that hide out in the warm spots. Starting early to identify pests in the garden is really helpful.
And row covers become a big thing then. I mean, if we have another hot summer and all of that, you know, and I'm hoping we're not going to like we did last year, but it's, you know, row covers become a really beneficial piece of equipment in a garden.
Yeah.
You know, from grasshoppers, because that's where we have a big problem with grasshoppers when it's dry and hot where I am, because it's like a field where we are. And so you have to cover them or you'll lose them. Yeah. I literally lost some crops a few years ago.
And even birds, I would guess, right? They're going to keep some birds.
Berries probably more you know, or worms. But
sure.
Yeah.
I think birds are an interesting dichotomy because they eat our berries, but they also eat the caterpillars that eat our brachias or whatever.
Right. Hmm.
So we want the birds. I have this whole family of crows that sit up there and watch me. And they're deciding what to do. And someone had
don't faint.
Someone had a idea in a gardening magazine to take little stones and paint them red with little black dots because they look like what? Strawberries. Strawberries. Oh. And put them around your strawberry plants. And when the crows go down to eat your strawberries early, because there's no strawberries, real strawberries, they'll see those and go, well, we're not interested, and they'll go away. But we'll see.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just usually throw it's something
cruel,
over.
But
cruel. Sounds like a fun art project, yeah, too. You can get some interesting strawberries.
So we've had our first garden talk. We'll have you back in March, and we'll look at, as kind of what you started to talk about, Pat, some of the techniques that we can use to mitigate problems that may come up, especially with the changing climate potential. We won't know until it really happens, but have some things on hand that we can do for heat and water loss and things like that. But, you know, we'll probably really get into seed, starting seeds and little plants in our light greenhouses or wherever we can. So thank you very much, Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Produce.
Thank you.
And Pat Wentworth from the Sandpoint Community Gardens.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure. And Julie, do you want to say anything?
I think we're wrapping it up. Thanking everyone for the great advice this week. It's got me excited about gardening.
Oh, yeah. We have just enough time to hear the very end of a song. I do want to say that this interview, this morning show, this Garden Talk edition will be available as a podcast on our website at krfy.org. And if you have any questions for our Garden Talk guests, I think of you as part of the show. You're not really guests anymore. You're part of it. You can always email us at krfyradio@gmail.com. And yes, Pat?
I just want to say that we've got so many wonderful local florist and gardening shops around here that the people are exceptionally knowledgeable. Mm. And so, you know, they're just great. And it's much nicer to talk to somebody about it rather than Google them, you know, mm-hmm. Google something online. So we've got many here. So go see them. They're great people and really knowledgeable.
And they love to talk about
the
gardens and what
they
know.
Your best.
That kind of knowledge is priceless.
Yep.
We want to thank everyone for tuning in today to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. I want to thank my guest co-host, Julie Calamine. Thank you, Julie, for being with us today.
Very welcome, Susie.
And we'll be back here on Thursday with Lonesome Jack, and his guests will be folks from Habitat for Humanities. They have an event coming up. Talk about that organization. And next week, our guests will be from the Audubon Society, Rich Del Carlo and Brian.
Brian Baxter.
Uh-huh. And we'll be talking about birds and birding. So join us again. That's always at 8 o'clock on 88.5 KRFY on Tuesday and Thursday, the morning show. Here's a little bit of a song by the Whites. It's called Keep on the Sunny Side. Have a beautiful day.